Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam. Dear listeners, Radio Sai continues its weekly presentation of the talking book version of Mr. Howard Moffat's highly acclaimed book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. The author was among the very early Westerners who came to Satya Sai Baba as a skeptic in 1964, and drawn by his enigma, he stayed for considerable periods of time near him in the next 6 years. During this period, he conducted extensive research and probing investigations into the Sai phenomena. He published his findings as the book that has become a classic of Sai literature, often considered the primer which introduced Sri Satya Sai Baba to millions round the world. This book was first published in 1971. Since then, it has been instrumental in drawing millions of seekers to the loving path of Satya Sai. These readings, dear listeners, are being aired every week, and if you wish to revisit a chapter at any time, you can do so at our website radiosai.org. So dear listeners, welcome now to Sai Baba, Man of Miracles by Howard Moffat.
We are now at chapter 14, entitled Eternal Here and Now. This chapter starts off with a quote from the dream of Ravan. Quote, "There the when is an eternal now, the where an eternal here." Unquote. So far, throughout the course of this series, we have heard Mr. Moffat narrate incidents of how Swami takes care of his devotees. Let us now listen to more such incidents, which bring out Baba's omnipotence and omnipresence. The narrative begins with the recording of the following incident by the historian Mr. N. Kasturi, who is also Baba's biographer.
At about 1:30 p.m. on June 21, 1959, Baba's close disciples were alarmed because his temperature shot up suddenly to 104.5 degrees. About 5 minutes later, the thermometer registered a fall to 99 degrees. This was a mystery to them, and Baba did not at the time enlighten them. However, that evening he was having dinner with a number of his devotees on a terrace in the moonlight. Among them was a young man from Madras who had been for some time staying with Baba, but was leaving the next day. Suddenly Swami said to him, "When you go to your mother tomorrow, tell her that she should be more careful about fire." This aroused considerable curiosity and some anxiety. So Baba told them that the lady Sari had caught fire that morning in Madras while she was in her puja room, but that the flames had been extinguished in time. The Sari was ruined, but she was unharmed. After dinner, one of the devotees thought of putting through a trunk call to Madras. Baba agreed, and it was done. The lady came to the phone herself and gave the inquirers more details of the accident. Then Baba spoke to her, and the listening devotees heard him laugh and say, "Oh no, I did not burn my hands. I just had an increase in temperature for a short while." Some years later, I had first-hand confirmation of the story from Mr. G. Venkatamuni, whose wife Sushila was the person concerned. "Yes, her sari had caught fire while she was in the puja room," he said, "and in a moment she was enveloped in flames. Panic seized her, but she had long been a devotee, and the first words that sprang to her lips were, 'Sai Baba.' Immediately the flames died away, and Sushila, knowing from experience the power of Baba at any distance, felt quite sure that he had somehow come to her aid in the crisis. Forgetting for a moment that he had not come to her in his physical body, she had asked him on the telephone if he had burned his hands. Yet this is not such a foolish question as might at first sight appear. Psychic research workers have found many case histories of astral travel where a shock to the astral body has caused effects, such as wounds, burns, and bruises on the physical body. This is brought about by the occult law of reciprocity. Baba's sudden rise in temperature seems to have been a mild example of this. Throughout the 1940s and for most of the 1950s, Baba often went into a trance during his out-of-the-body journeys. Suddenly and unexpectedly, he would become unconscious and those near him would know that he was away, probably with some devotee at a distant place. On returning, he might or might not tell those around him something of what happened. On occasions, there would be reciprocal effects on Baba's physical body indicative of what he was doing. Sometimes, for instance, a few words of what he was saying at the distant place would issue from his physical lips. At other times, vibhuti would emanate from his body. This latter was usually when he had gone to be present at the death of a devotee. Mr. Kasturi says, on such occasions, symbolic of death, destruction, and the end of the temporary and the evanescent, sacred vibhuti issues from the mouth of the body that Baba leaves behind in order to proceed to the deathbed. Kasturi then gives an example. At about 5:20 p.m. on November 15, 1958, Baba was reading a letter aloud to some people around him, when suddenly he exclaimed, "Ha!" and fell to the floor. The body was quiet for 10 minutes. Then it appeared to cough. Puffs of vibhuti were coming from the mouth, shooting out, Kasturi says, to a distance of more than a foot and a half. At 5:35 p.m., having been unconscious for 15 minutes, he resumed the reading where he had left off quite naturally and showing no signs of exhaustion. When requested, he told the devotees where he had been, Dehradun in the Himalayas. There he said the mother of a doctor, well known in the ashram, had just passed away. Baba had gone to give her help at the time of transition, which was 5:30 p.m. He also remarked that the doctor, her son, was present at the woman's death in Dehradun and that people were singing bhajan songs in the room there. He further described how the old lady had at the end announced to everybody, "This is my last breath," and then expired. 2 days later, on November 17th, a letter came to Baba from the doctor whose mother had died. He wrote, "My mother drew her last breath on Saturday at 5:30 p.m. We were doing bhajan during her last hours, as per her wish. She was remembering you constantly."
Here is another example of Baba's knowledge of things at a distance and his power to intervene.
In the early 1960s, when Mr. K.R.K. Bhatt, a divisional manager of the Life Insurance Corporation of India, there was a case of bribery and corruption among his subordinates. This was in connection with an important promotion, and some anonymous letters had set an official inquiry in motion. It was found that several people were involved in the plot, but the main culprit seemed to be Mr. Bhatt's male stenographer, who, however, tried to protect himself by shifting the responsibility onto his chief. He stated to the inquiry officer that he had simply carried out Mr. Bhatt's instructions in all that he did. It began to look as if Bhatt, although completely innocent, would become involved, it being a question of one man's word against that of another. Bhatt could think of no way in which to establish his innocence, and he began to be very worried. If he were found guilty of involvement in such an affair, the effects would be drastic to his career. Finally, the whole matter hinged on whether Bhatt had or had not received personally in his office and signed for a certain registered letter. The stenographer stated that his chief had done so, whereas Bhatt knew for certain that he had not. It should have been easy to check with the appropriate post office and find out whose signature had been given for the letter on the known date. But the postmaster stated that he could not assist because it had happened too long ago. The records, he said, were kept only 6 months and then destroyed. The relevant letter had been received more than 6 months before. At this point, Baba began appearing in dreams to Mr. Bhatt, who was a devotee. In a dream vision, Baba assured Bhatt that the records were in fact still at the post office. They had not been destroyed as stated. In the end, the postmaster was forced to admit that this was true. He made the excuse that his predecessor had let the old records pile up and that there were so many, in fact, over 3 years' accumulation, that he had neither the time nor the facilities to destroy them. He maintained, however, that as the mass of documents were not in any order, but all in a jumbled heap, it would be quite impossible to find the one little paper so important to Mr. Bhatt. There was absolutely no point in making the attempt, he said, as it would be like looking for a needle in a haystack. That night, Swami appeared again in a dream to his devotee, Mr. Bhatt, saying that a man should be appointed to search at the post office and that the relevant document would be quickly found. Following this, Bhatt at last persuaded postal authorities to attempt what he wanted. A clerk was put on to begin a search through the great stack of papers. Quite at random, he picked out a bundle and began going through it. "Miracles of miracles," said Mr. Bhatt. "There was the document I needed so badly, right in the first bundle. It showed conclusively that the stenographer had signed for the vital registered letter on behalf of his boss. This cleared the latter of suspicion. The stenographer and several other men were found guilty of corrupt practices, and the corporation administered appropriate penalties. Sai Baba's all-seeing eye and intervention from afar had saved his devotee from injustice. "Not only is he above the limitations of space, but of time too," Mr. Bhatt declared. "When we were at Prashantiniliam early in 1965, Swami told my wife privately that I should retire or take long leave, but somehow stop work and be away from the office by June 1st that year. He did not say why, but I had learned by this time to follow Swami's advice. However, it was quite impossible for me to clear up all my business affairs, train my successor, and hand over by June 1st. I could manage it, I found, by July 1st. So I decided that that must suffice. I would be a month later than Swami had intimated, but I hoped that would be all right. I was wrong. On June 4th, I had my first heart attack. Baba had obviously foreseen it and given me the warning. The strain of work had brought it on, no doubt, and if I had taken his advice, I could have avoided it. Well, through his grace, I am still alive and able to do many things that the specialists say I must not do. Many other people have told me that Baba has foreseen events of importance in their future, not only dangers to health and limb, but many things that loom large in their daily lives. Births, marriages, new jobs, business opportunities, and examination results, even to the precise marks that will be obtained.
The next story concerns Mr. V. Radhakrishna of Kupam, whom Baba seems determined to keep on this earth as long as possible. In 1960, 7 years after he had been raised from the dead, Radhakrishna was again sick and was suffering a good deal of pain.
He told me, "One night the doctor gave me a morphine injection and I went off to sleep. But it seems that I got up later and wandered about in a state of unconsciousness. I don't remember anything about it, but I must have fallen down the well near the house. The well was open, about 10 feet in diameter and some 50 feet deep, with about 30 feet of water in it. The sides are of smooth stone and there are no ledges or anything whatever to hold on to or stand on." His daughter Vijaya, who was present at Kupam at the time of the accident, takes up the story from her diary notes. "My mother awoke at about 3 a.m. and saw that father was missing from his bed. So she went to search for him. Outside, she called his name and presently she heard a voice shout, 'I am in the well.' She ran over and looked down with an electric torch. There he was. He seemed to be standing in the water about up to his waist in it. But she knew that there was nothing there for him to stand on. She called down to him, but he did not reply, just remained there in the water. She rushed inside and awoke my two brothers and myself. So we went over, but did not know how to get him out. There was a stone slab across the top of the well with a gap on either side, through one of which he must have fallen. My eldest brother, Krishna Kumar, tried to reach my father from the slab. But Father was too far down for this. We must have been making a lot of noise because the chief of police suddenly appeared on the scene. He told us later that he just happened to be passing that way from the railway to his office when he heard us. It was not his usual nightly route home, and he does not know why he went that way. Incidentally, he was a friend of our family. With ropes and a pulley and a basket, they finally fished my father out. I am not sure exactly how, because I kept back out the way. But it did seem to me, at the time, that Krishna Kumar had superhuman strength in pulling my father up. Yet now I believe that he was helped by a force from below. My father seemed half conscious when they got him out. He was taken into the house and put on his bed. We sent for the doctor. Then as he waited, we heard Father say, "When will I see you again, Baba?" Just as if Sai Baba was standing there in the room. No doubt he was, though we could not see him. When the doctor came and examined Father, he would not believe about his being in the well. But the chief of police was still there and confirmed our unlikely story. The doctor said there was no shock, and in fact the patient was much better than he had been before his misadventure. There was no need for any treatment or medicine, he said. Just a cup of strong coffee was all Father needed. Radha Krishna himself told me, "I knew that it was all Baba's work, keeping me up in the water." So, on the same day, I hired a car and we drove to Puttaparthi. As soon as we arrived, Baba greeted us from the balcony. Then laughing, he called down, "My shoulders are aching with holding you up so long last night, Radha Krishna." Earlier that morning, Baba had told other devotees that he had been away during the night helping Radha Krishna, who was in trouble.
What can one say? Was Baba at Kupam in subtle form, seen only by Radha Krishna in another state of consciousness? And was he employing his tremendous psychokinetic power to hold Radha Krishna's body above the waterline in the well? Some of us may have come across manifestations of vibhuti on holy pictures, mainly on photographs of Baba, but also on pictures of gods and avatars in the same shrine rooms. The ash may be sticking to the glass on the outside, or it may appear under the glass of the pictures. It may also come as a small patch that gradually grows until, like a layer of hoarfrost, it almost covers the entire picture. Or, on the other hand, it may appear all at once, practically smothering the picture in a moment. Something similar happened in the life of Dr. D.S. Chandar.
Dr. D.S. Chandar, the dental surgeon of Bangalore, is one of many who have experienced this strange phenomenon. He told me that vibhuti suddenly appeared on all the pictures of a shrine room. Then after about a month, it completely vanished. He felt uneasy about its disappearance, as if perhaps the divine grace were withdrawn because he had done something wrong or left undone something which he ought to have done. His wife often assisted him in the surgery, and it was his custom to ring a bell when he needed her for something. One morning, when he rang the bell, his wife happened at the moment to be putting flowers in the shrine room. All the pictures there were clear, she said, with no traces of ash on them. She was sure of this because after the sudden disappearance of the ash, she always looked hopefully for any signs that it might be returning. Leaving the flowers, she went off quickly to the surgery to see what her husband needed, and when she returned, a few minutes later, all the pictures in the shrine room were again covered with vibhuti. She hurried back to tell her husband, and as she passed through the sitting room, she saw that there too, Baba's photos had patches of ash on them. Most of the vibhuti vanished again after a month or two, but a little remained to keep the doctor happy and was still there when I paid him a visit. My wife and I have been taken to see various houses in various cities where the strange phenomenon is taking place. I noted that when the ash is on top of the glass, it adheres tightly to the surface, although some falls off and collects on the bottom of the frames. A woman in one home told us, at first it came on the outside of the glass and some people said that we must have put it on ourselves for publicity or something. So then it began forming underneath between the glass and the picture. I examined some of the pictures where the ash was under the glass. The backs in most cases were securely glued on and certainly looked as if they had been undisturbed for a long time. Apart from that, these people and all the others we met in connection with the ash phenomena were not the types to indulge in imposture. They were devout, religious people, filled, it seemed to me, not with egotism and spiritual pride, but with humility, veneration, and awe regarding the benevolent power that had left its mark in their homes.
We hope you enjoyed today's presentation. More when we get together again. Meanwhile, all the best and Jai Sai Ram. You have been listening to a presentation of excerpts from Mr. Howard Murfitt's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. This book has been published in 1971 by Frederick Miller Limited in London.